Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today I have two extraordinary guests, especially in the JavaScript world. We have John Papa, who's a regional director, an MVP, and a Pluralsight author. How are you, John?
I'm doing good, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you here again. You have been a frequent guest lately, and that has been to the good for the show and for the other guests we have. And today we have Elijah Manner, who's also a regional director and MVP, also a Pluralsight author. He's a front-end web developer for the Lampo Group with Dave Ramsey. Elijah, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
And I didn't say that you are also two of the nicest and most helpful people on the web. Every time I have run into a question, no matter how simplistic, the two of you have been there to point me in the right direction. And I, for one, am very appreciative, and I know there are a lot of other people who feel the same way. On that note, Elijah, let me turn to you and ask you what you've been involved with in terms of JavaScript, what kinds of new things you see as becoming important, what kinds of trends?
Yeah, historically, I've kind of gotten to the JavaScript world mainly in my involvement with jQuery. I've been involved for maybe past 3 or 4 years. I worked on the jQuery podcast with Ralph Whitbeck for a while. And I'm always interested in what's latest and greatest in the front-end world. I did a lot of ASP.NET MVC. And with that, you kind of needed some kind of a front-end library. And early on, Phil Hack was using jQuery, so I kind of piggybacked off that. And as I learned more and more about jQuery, I started to realize I didn't know JavaScript as well as I thought I did. And so I really got interested in digging deep into that and really understanding how it's different from languages like Java and C Sharp. And so, you know, I've done quite a few articles and sessions on at conferences about that. And I've always enjoyed knowing things really deeply. And so with that, I've been able to talk at conferences and enjoyed making Pluralsight courses about the things. And so now I'm using jQuery. I still use jQuery, but one of the recent talks I did at Angle Brackets was when not to use jQuery. Not that I'm against it at all, but the browsers have come so far these days. There are many things that you don't need jQuery for, especially if you have a browser that's modern. The APIs that are native to the DOM could do a lot of the things that jQuery can. And so I had a whole talk about that, and I think that might be where this podcast comes into play, especially with Angular, like when should you use jQuery or when should you use Angular, and can you use them both and things like that. But I'm hoping it here at work to start introducing Angular in some of our projects. But we have to support IE8. So with that, it kind of makes sense to still use jQuery since it does a lot of that weird logic to make IE8 behave well. If we didn't have to support IE8, I probably would rely less on jQuery. But that's kind of the point where I think it really gains you a lot of the bang for the buck. When you have to start supporting IE8. Now, there are lots of other things it does nice for you, jQuery, and I like a lot of the idioms and a lot of the helper methods. But it's just something to think about, especially when you're talking about mobile and the page weight. But you can make custom builds with jQuery, which is another point I brought up in the talk. If that's a concern of yours and you don't use certain pieces, you can make custom builds of jQuery. That could be much, much smaller. So there's kind of a lot of different topics we could talk about.
I think you've identified a number of topics that I'd very much like to get into in terms of the role of jQuery and whether jQuery and Angular are complementary or they compete. I'm noticing on my own website that you were on yet another podcast in July of 2011 talking about jQuery. So my impression, and I've been walking around saying, was that a year or two ago, jQuery was the hot library. But it's actually more like 3 years ago or so that it was really on everybody's lips. And today, I think you hear jQuery as a little bit less central for a lot of developers. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing because a lot of what we read about in blogs and conferences are usually the hottest topics. They're not necessarily what people are using. And so it's, I think, a little deceiving just by looking at conferences and blogs because jQuery is still used highly. It's just not the hottest thing. And people are starting to consider not using it. But if you look at the real landscape of people actually getting work done, jQuery is still really deep in that culture. Like, we're trying to find more front-end web developers at the Lampo Group, and we still need people that know jQuery. A lot of front-end web developers don't know how to write front-end code without jQuery, which is unfortunate, but that's just kind of the landscape. So, but at conferences, it's very true. I think organizers are having a hard time finding people talking about jQuery just because there's this trend of moving away from it. And even still, the things that you see at conferences, it takes a while for that to kind of trickle down into the big workforce. But yeah, it definitely is true. You don't see it as much. You see more about Angular and Ember and a lot of those frameworks, which Angular, you don't even need jQuery. It has its own internal jQlite. Whereas Ember, it's still very much part of that culture. So you would use jQuery with Ember or Backbone. And so even those frameworks rely on that. Some of them, the Backbone says it could use Zepto instead, and it can, but Zepto doesn't support IE at all. And so you're kind of alienating that whole arena. So really, they're using jQuery behind the scenes.
Well, let me ask you what may be a straw man question, and I'd like to put this to both of you. jQuery does a lot of things, but its central focus, at least to my eyes, is DOM manipulation. It's identification of objects in the DOM and manipulating those objects. And Angular and some of the other libraries that you mentioned don't really do DOM manipulation. They're much more about data binding. Is that too simplistic an understanding, or is that accurate, and does that put them in conflict as different approaches to JavaScript programming? Well, let me start with you, John Papa.
So I think you're right and you're wrong at the same time. So the way I look at it is, yeah, there's it depends how you look at those libraries. And maybe a better way to phrase it is, depending on what you need out of jQuery or Angular, they are either complementary or adversarial. So I don't think there is a real black or white answer to that. Yeah. When I think of jQuery as a whole, I probably think of it less so as a DOM manipulation tool than as a tool to help us do cross-browser client-side development much easier, which is why I think what Elijah was alluding to, and I've seen as well in the marketplace, is there's a trend right now where people are starting to use it less, not because it's less important, but because the browsers have decided, you know, to adopt the same kind of things, so we don't have to have this tool that talks between two browsers. Because years ago, just writing an event handler for the many different browsers and versions out there was just a pain, and jQuery made that kind of stuff easy. Now you don't even think about using jQuery for it. You can use anything you want. You can just use plain old vanilla JavaScript. But Angular itself as well, the other side is, while jQuery does do a lot of DOM manipulation, Angular also does DOM manipulation through its data binding. So I guess it really depends on how you look at it. I think what you're really asking, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jesse, is would it benefit you to have a project that uses both those together? Is that what you're getting at?
Well, it is a question that I want to discuss, but at the moment, what I was really trying to get at is whether these two libraries really have fundamentally different approaches to what they do.
I think they do. I really do think they do. What do you think, Elijah?
Yeah, I mean, jQuery very much so has a bunch of nice tools. It does the DOM manipulation well, like you mentioned. It actually selects things from the DOM very well. It does AJAX well, and it does some basic animations well. Those are the main pieces. Some people really wanted the library to do a lot more, but they really tried to stick to their guns about those are the things we do well, and they didn't really provide a direction of how you did it, how you organized your code or anything like that. And that's where it's something like Angular or Backbone or Ember, you really gain some nice structuring of your code of how you interact with, you know, your controllers and your views and where you should put them. That's something never jQuery never had, and people always wanted it to kind of force them, because other libraries like Dojo would kind of encourage you to do something in a certain way. And so jQuery is very much a utility library, but which is great because designers or people who don't have a lot of coding experience could piggyback off that and start doing some useful things, but it could get out of hand very easily once you start writing more code. And that's where something like Angular is really handy. And with Angular, you still do some jQuery-like things, but usually that's limited to a directive where you're kind of manipulating the DOM. All the rest is very declarative, which is not the case with jQuery. And so there is some overlap. Angular doesn't use jQuery to do its AJAX. It has its own mechanism with promises, its own version of promises with Q. But I would think I still use jQuery for like quick prototypes or websites with simple interactions, or if I know I need IE8, if I don't want to pull in a big library like Angular or Ember, and I just need something simple, then jQuery is a really nice solution for that. But if you're using IE9 or above or any other browser, just the native DOM stuff like Query Selector All, it's essentially what Sizzle gives you in jQuery. Add Event Listener, you don't have to worry about attach event like you do in IE8 and older. It becomes a lot simpler. There are some things that aren't supported, like class list and the HTML5 data APIs, but there are polyfills for that you could use. So you could very much get away from jQuery if you want, if you know your browser set is IE9 or above.
Well, I want to point out, I know that, John, you wanted to jump in, but I just want to point out very quickly, as of May 2013, I see on a quick search of the internet that IE8 has dropped below 10%. And that was 7 months ago. So it's not completely unreasonable to think that some folks might decide to only support IE9 and above.
Well, the interesting thing is the Google apps, Google has decided for its Google apps that they actually dropped IE9 last month because they support the current version and the last version. For a very long time, they dropped IE8, which everyone was excited about. But for our corporation, we still need to support IE8. The interesting thing is IE8 has a higher stats here than IE9 does because IE9 and 10 have the auto upgrade feature. So IE8 tends to be stuck on Windows XP users because that's the latest version of Internet Explorer they could have. But interesting, next year in April 2014, the extended support of Windows XP will be done. And so hopefully we'll see something interesting. Either corporations will upgrade their operating system or they'll change browsers.
Yeah, I'm using Netscape 1.5, so I don't even have JavaScript. John Papa, you were going to say something about frameworks and libraries.
It's something that I think we're all talking about, but we probably should call out specifically. I know for me, to actually understand all these things, what I have to do is kind of put things in a category. Whether it makes a complete sense or not, it helps me understand it. So I like to think of things as libraries versus frameworks. And the libraries, and others have said this probably better than I will, but the libraries to me are more like utilities, things that kind of help you get through. And then you can use them when you have a specific need. A framework is something that is a set of JavaScript that kind of gets you moving in a particular direction. And you usually only have one framework for your application, but you might have multiple libraries that you actually reference. And the reason I'm relating this here is Elijah mentioned jQuery as being a utility library. And I agree, that's kind of what I look at it as too. It's like a super utility library. I mean, it's fantastic and it's got a lot. But then things like Angular or Ember, those are more of a framework where they do so much more than just those features. They actually put you on a path to building the whole application. So I think there's a split in these where the categories, you've got the libraries and the frameworks. And then I think there's also a third category, which Elijah alluded to, which is, what about these, I'll make up a name for them, super frameworks, which not only do things like what Angular does, but also provide UI controls and testing and, you know, the kitchen sink and do your laundry for you. Things like Sentia, for example. You know, they do a lot of this stuff. And it's escaped me what Elijah mentioned earlier, but I think that's one of those as well. So you can have these different varying degrees of features in these JavaScript files, if you will, that kind of get you to your end goal. And I think, you know, the reason I bring this up is jQuery itself, its whole purpose in the beginning was to help you get through a lot of these issues. And I think some of those issues still exist. And even though it's only 10% of the market, as you say, is using things like older versions of IE, that's still millions and millions of people. So it's still very needed.
So what is the poor working programmer to do when faced with this ever-changing scene and these endless selections of libraries? Do they just give up on trying to keep up and stick with something that they know, or how do they proceed through this process?
If you figure that out, let me know. Well, I think, you know, a lot of it is just understanding what is it you need to get your job done always comes first, you know, and it really has to get to that, which is why I think we still see, you know, Elijah and I talk about, and he's got a wonderful talk on, you know, do you need jQuery anymore? I got the title wrong, but it's a great talk and I heard him give it. But while he's giving that talk and there's people like us talking about trimming down our use of it, that's not the majority of people right now. And it's not because we're smarter. It's just because we're looking at trying to do more bleeding edge stuff in some ways. There's people who have to get their jobs done. And to get your job done these days, jQuery is still a very valuable skill to learn and use. Yeah, doesn't I, mean sorry, and you mentioned, Elijah, that there's people who just have jQuery skills and not JavaScript or web programming skills. I don't see that a lot, but I hear it a lot. And I'm curious how someone can maybe translate those skills to JavaScript skills.
Yeah, I very much agree with you. What we're trying to do, you know, John and myself and other people, is just try to, we're trying to predict where the trends are going so that we could equip people to learn what they need to get their job done eventually. Like, they need to know what they need now to be successful. And then we need to try to teach them and encourage them on a path that will stick around. Like, I had a conversation just last week at work. We're trying to bet on which framework is going to keep on going. We don't want to pick another library that is dead in a couple years. So, you know, we made a big list of pros and cons of all these various libraries, and hoping that the one we pick will be there. But in the meantime, we needed to get stuff done. And a lot of people here use jQuery as a kind of a common library to use. And that's very much where people are at. Now, people are playing around with Angular and stuff, and that's more the one I think, you know, John and I lean toward. He also does stuff with Dremel, both very good libraries. But it's just really hard now to what, you know, how do you invest your time? Because there's so many things to learn. And so we're just trying to guide them in the right direction, pretty much.
How much does the fact that Angular is supported by Google and has that stable, large corporate backing, how much is that a factor in these decisions?
I think it weighs quite a bit, honestly.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it's the momentum charts, like you've pointed out, Jesse, and the fact that there's a large company and there's a lot of momentum behind it. I'm not a psychologist, but for whatever reason, when people talk about Angular, they get all excited because it's a company named Google. It's doing great things, and everybody's using it.
To me, those reasons, plus the fact that it feels very like a jQuery culture to me, in that people who don't know a lot about how to code can still get stuff done. It could seem a little bit magical at first, but they could actually be productive. And then the more you learn, you could actually do more advanced things. And then it has this nice pendulum, kind of like jQuery. Like, you could get started very easily, and then you could get advanced very easily. And I see the same trend in the same community.
That's a great parallel, Elijah, because, and I mean, let me interrupt you, but that's really important point, I think. Remember when jQuery first came out, the big thing that really got people excited was people who weren't doing web programming were now drawn to it like never
exactly.
before.
Exactly, yeah.
And now with Angular, you're seeing that again. So that's something I hadn't thought of. That's really, yeah.
And if you compare it to some of the other libraries, I love the people behind Ember are super smart, but the people that I hear that tend to try to use it for the first time have more trouble just getting their head around how it works. It's not as approachable. And again, it is to some people who have a really big history in computer science and MVC and how that works, you know, they could pick it up pretty easy. But for the majority of the developers I see that respond to it, it's just harder to pick up. Whereas Angular is like, oh, I just stick these things. The declarative nature of Knockout with the bindings or Angular is very appealing to developers from what I've seen. And that kind of gets the hook in there. It gets them excited about it. Like, oh, I could do stuff really easily. And it's amazing. Like, they're like, I don't even know what code I would write to do that, you know? And then from there, they could hone up their skills. They could learn more about JavaScript and testing and use all these nice libraries and start making directives. And it's just a totally different way to think. And that's what excites me. And having Google behind it makes me think, you know, some people joke when I bring up that Google's behind it. They're like, oh, they're going to kill it like Google Reader. You know, but they've rewritten business pieces that make them money with Angular. And so they're invested in it. It's not like they're just going to willy-nilly, you know, change to something else. Like, they would have to rewrite systems that they are dependent on money. So that says a lot to me that they're so invested in it.
And let's say they did kill it. I mean, not kill it, but let's say they just stopped working on it. I mean, do you think those millions of people using it are going to just stop at this point? Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I think it's
gotten, there's such a big community. I think people
it
would
has.
Work it. Yeah, it would have a life of its own. Yeah.
It's even like if jQuery had work stopped on it. It's not like people are going to stop using it at this point. So I think Angular has reached that tipping point where it's really taken on a life of its own, and the community has really risen to it. And maybe that's another symptom of a library that's come of age.
The other really good thing is, since Google is behind it, they push the web forward really hard, and they have a big voice in the standards committees and how things change, and they could change their own browser, Chrome, to support features that are kind of on the edge. And since they own AngularJS, they can make those kind of work together. And that makes me excited, you know, about web components and how they can maybe merge those in a little bit closer and really drive the web forward, because they have such a big voice. When there's a library that has one or two maintainers that are the main contributors, it makes me a little nervous. Just about, you know, hey, as a company, are we willing to fork that? Or what if I've seen many developers who make a library and they switch jobs and they just do something completely different. So they drop the library and don't support it anymore. So there's risks like that when you start having smaller libraries with few maintainers and things like that, but just things to think about.
Let me bring you to another feature of Angular, which is that they make a point of saying that Angular was built with testing from day one, and that Angular is highly testable, and the testing environment of choice appears to be Karma and Jasmine. And so that raises two questions. Do you think that Angular is going to increase the adoption of test-driven development among JavaScript and web programmers? That's my first question. And my second, which you can answer along with it, is whether Jasmine is a candidate to be a really strong test environment for JavaScript. And why don't we start with Elijah?
Yeah, I really hope that developers start getting more on, our front-end web developers start getting more on the testing bandwagon. Historically, that the server end of the world have been really good at unit tests, and front-end people haven't. Part of that is just the tooling, and it hasn't been modeled very well. But there is a lot more buzz lately just about making unit tests and things like that. Unfortunately, with Angular, it is easy to do, and there are examples to do it, but I still see a lot of tutorials teaching it that don't really show how to do it. So I think I really hope it adopts more people to do testing.
Let me just roll you back to that, because I'm about to do a from scratch course on testing Angular with Jasmine. And, when you say that folks don't show really how to do it, tell me more, because I don't want to make the same mistake.
Well, it's so easy when you're doing articles or short screencasts just to get something to work and visually show people how you get something done. It's a little less glamorous to show the testing phase. And so I don't think the bloggers necessarily are omitting it because they don't know how to do it. But it's just not as glamorous to show how to do that.
Oh, I see. So what you're saying is when people are showing Angular, they're not necessarily showing testing. I thought you were saying when they're showing testing, they're not really showing how to get started.
Oh, no, that's not what I meant. And so I do hope I'll see more people showing examples of how they could test it. And I love Jasmine. For a while, I preferred Mocha, but the Jasmine version that Angular uses is a slight fork of the main branch, and they added some nice things that I prefer. And it's a nice BDD feeling testing library, which I quite like. And Karma makes things more interesting these days, since cross-browser compatibility is such an issue. The Karma system will actually kick up different versions of browsers and run the same tests on all of them, which is a great thing, because the problem you have with just PhantomJS, you're running your unit tests in a headless WebKit, is you only get WebKit, and which is not the only browser out there, not the only rendering engine out there. And so I like the idea of Karma a lot. And I really do hope people get on the testing bandwagon more. Definitely they make it as easy as possible. So hopefully with that, it encourages people to get started. But again, I want to see more and more tutorials and quick screencasts about, you know, just about how getting testing set up would be great.
I think there's a lot of places that testing could really improve from. And Jesse, for writing a course on it, some I'd love to see, is one of the big battles a lot of these guys have when they get into testing, such as myself for the first time on Angular, is you have to install or learn about Karma, Jasmine, maybe right. Phantom. You know, then you got to look into things like sign-on. And you start right. getting into all these different pieces, and you have to figure out how they fit together. And I realize it's not a lot once you grasp it, but that first entry point, it's not as easy as, you know, people who've been there and done that make it out to be. So there's a couple of hurdles to get over. And then the other piece of it is the whole asynchronous side of testing with Angular. It's not something that you just write a test and it's done. There's little things that, you know, unless you really read about it, you don't know. Like, for example, that when you come back from an async test, you might want to call apply in Angular so it actually gets the value back. Things like that. So there's all these little nuances, and you know, and quite frankly, a lot of times the test, the setup and the mocking and the stubbing is a big hurdle too. So if somebody's been down the unit test road, I think they'll have an easier time with it. You know, if they have extensive unit testing in, for example, C sharp. But for somebody coming into this who doesn't do it already, I'm not sure if the adoption is going to be super high for new testers.
Even for somebody who's done it in C sharp, you get spoiled in the C sharp world where you can just check a box in Visual Studio and say, do testing for me. And then if you get a little more sophisticated, you might choose your own testing, test runner and testing environment. To set up Karma and Jasmine, you have to go all the way back to installing Node.js. And then installing Karma and doing a fair amount from the and creating configuration files and doing a fair amount from the command line. So I wouldn't say any of it's terribly difficult, but it's not trivial to get started with your very first test. And then of course they change all the words on you, so that you start hearing about specs and so on. And I think that the barrier is a little bit higher than I would have hoped to get started with Angular testing. Of course, it does provide an opportunity for those of us creating courses.
Yeah, there's plenty of opportunities in this whole space with Angular and the web to still make it easier. Not just on testing, but the whole thing, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. So I think we're seeing it.
Well, that's where Hot Towel really made a huge difference. Just to plug that for one second, John, what you did with Hot Towel in terms of getting people up and running in Angular quickly, instead of facing a blank sheet of paper, to have something that you can adapt and change but from a running start has made a huge difference.
Yeah, I think we need things like that for tooling, and there's so much more to go. And for example, I was using, I can't even remember the concept count. Ward Bell and I call it concept count when, you start counting all the things you have to learn before you can do what the one line of code I just put on the screen.
Yeah.
I remember looking the other day, I had to install Node, use NPM, Grunt, and 5 different Grunt tasks just to be able to minify and bundle my application and lint it. And I got up to some point 9 different concepts in the concept count to do this. And it literally was only one line of code when I was done. I'm like, this screams of I need tooling, to get masses. And, the more advanced developers out there say, no, give me my green and black screens. Those are wonderful. But, when you start getting tooling for things like WebStorm and Sublime and Visual Studio that help with this, I think that's when you're going to see an even higher adoption rate with them.
Well, there's a lot of developers who are just afraid of the console. And so you're already kind of limiting the people that are interested in even getting down that route.
Elijah, you talked about this talk that you gave about when not to use jQuery. And without undermining your talk, because I know that it's not a brief conversation, but can you give us a couple of highlights about the kinds of things you're talking about?
Sure, yeah. It was called jQuery Free JavaScript. And I basically start with the concept of when you might want to use jQuery. And again, I mentioned, quick prototypes, but those are dangerous because sometimes when you make a prototype and show your boss, they're like, oh, let's ship that,
Right.
So that might not be the best idea, but simple websites with simple interactions. Or of course, if you have a library or framework that depends on jQuery, or you have plugins that depend on jQuery, you'll need that. But really, from there on, I mentioned if you need to support IE8 or less, then jQuery makes a lot of sense. From that point, I mentioned, okay, now let's say that you need jQuery for some reason or another, for one of those reasons. Let's talk about how we could possibly make a custom build of that. That only includes the things that you need. Because as of jQuery 1.8, you can now build your own versions with Grunt. And again, there's some knowledge there where you have to install Node and Grunt and all these things. But once you have that, you can actually say, maybe I don't need the Ajax module or the deprecated module, which hopefully you don't need, or all these other things you could exclude, and you could trim it down to a really small library. From that point on, I say, okay, let's just assume we can't use jQuery or we don't want to use jQuery. And for the rest of the talk, I talk about assuming you have i9 or above in modern browsers, I show how you can use native DOM APIs to do the exact same thing that jQuery does for you. And in many cases, they're almost one-liners. In some cases, you have to do some extra looping because of what jQuery provides for you, because it has to do the looping anyway, so it kind of hides that from you. But many of the concepts are just straightforward, one line type things. There are certain things you have to use polyfills for, which is just a small piece of code which mimics some native API that the DOM should have, but maybe an older version of a browser doesn't have it. And so in some cases, I show polyfills to use to make it really easy, but that's pretty much the talk. It's to appeal to people who think, maybe I don't need jQuery, or at least enlighten them to know, okay, well, I do need it. Or in this particular case, it's fine. Because when you start thinking about mobile applications, it becomes a little more interesting because you want your page weight to be really small. I'm going to give the talk again at Angle Brackets, the next Angle Brackets, which John can give you some dates for that. And I've given a couple other talks too, but it was received well. I've given it a couple times. I could give you the link to the slides for your show notes if you're interested.
That would be great. Yes, that would be terrific. One of the questions that it raises as jQuery becomes arguably less central is, what about libraries, commercial and otherwise, that depend on it, such as Kendo?
Well, yeah, Kendo has, they have their own suites of Angular components, and Kendo UI really is appealing to lots of different markets. They're very smart in that because they see where the trend's going. They'll still maintain jQuery components just because for the vast majority of developers who are just doing their day job, probably a lot of them are still using jQuery. But they're trying to appeal to the new market as well and have Angular components. I'm not sure about other libraries if they're appealing to them. Actually, they have their their own two-way binding framework and things like that. But I think third-party libraries are going to be smart, and the jQuery stuff will still be around for a while. But people are going to have to start thinking a little bit more about how they can appeal to some of these other larger frameworks that are SPA-like.
And I think as a developer today, what I would suggest is, by no means should you not look at jQuery. You should definitely be looking at jQuery and use it if it makes sense. But what I would caution against is something like Elijah mentioned, is you don't want to become a jQuery developer as opposed to a JavaScript developer.
Right. Yep.
Because, with the JavaScript, you can continue to move no matter where these libraries ebb and flow. And I don't think in any, by any means, we're at the place right now that's the end of this ride. I think we're just, we're at the beginning of a big wave of changes. I don't think we're going to see a lot of new frameworks by any means, but I think we're going to start seeing more solidifying and more emerging. Think of it kind of like the great breakups of the bells and then how they merged back together, I think that's kind of where we are right now, is things, we're not seeing a new framework pop up every day anymore. They're starting to solidify a bit. People are migrating to Ember, to Angular, to Durandal. I think people have stopped looking so much at moving towards things like Backbone, although they're still supporting it where it is. Things like Batman and CanJS are still popular. But I think the three winners that are coming out of this are those three right now.
Yeah, I agree. And they're making each other better. They're competing.
Yes.
And kind of like, Microsoft and Google, they're in some of the similar spaces, but they make each other better.